Hi, and welcome to the Crime Pod. I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Sam.
We are back. Thank you for going without us for a week. I hope you managed to get over to Scottish Murders and listen to our episode with Dawn on Pauline Riley. That was a very good case on Sam's front, so well done, Sam. This week we are back, and I'm not sure if it is a crime as such, more of a mystery. I'm going to tell you about the disappearance of Corey McKeague. So before we begin, this isn't something we normally do. We normally kind of just briefly chat for like two seconds, and then I'm like, so Sam, do this thing. But we've got quite a few things to get through, so apologies, you are going to have to listen to us chat. So firstly, there is no more CrimeCon promotion because that is CrimeCon been and gone, and it was amazing. It was a really, really great day. I think you'll agree, Sam, I know that your social battery is a lot less than mine. So
it was great though. It was really good, and it was so nice to see and meet all of these different people.
It was so weird.
Surreal.
So weird that people would like come up, like people were asking like what one was Sam, what one was Caitlin, to which Sam wouldn't play a game at all of like guess who. She'd be like, I'm Sam, and I was like, all right, okay, never mind.
But it just came out like I didn't mean it, I'm just like introducing myself.
Yeah. Someone used the word starstruck, and me and Sam are obviously like looking at them like us. I think as well, that's what we'd realised. We'd never ever posted a photo of us, apart from like funny birthday ones that are probably old. So a lot of people were like, oh my god, that's what you look like. Which
that's
we never really
used to put on. I'm kidding.
Sam! Yeah, we only post pre-COVID photos. But yeah, there was a load of like, oh my god, that's what you look like. And I don't know if that was like a, oh, that's what you look like, or oh, that's what you look like.
Probably a good mixture.
So that was really, really lovely. And yeah, it was so lovely to meet all of you. We genuinely absolutely loved it. And just a reminder, there was quite a few people that were like, oh, we're not on Instagram. Remember, we do have an email. I might put it in the show notes actually, because I don't think we put it out as much, so I'll put it in this week's episode show notes. So it is there, because people did say they'd love to get in touch but they don't have Instagram, which we thought we were being down with the kids getting Instagram, but our followers are like us. Terrible show. Yes. Social media. So yeah, that is the first thing. The second thing is that we have done our t-shirt competition. So Sam and I bought two different t-shirts to wear to CrimeCon, and we bought a third one for one of you guys. So it's the first ever kind of Crime Pod t-shirts. And we did a competition, and the last I checked, we had like over 150 entries, which is a lot for us. I know when people are like, thousands. But I mean, that was the last time I checked, and that was a week ago. So by the time this episode airs, the winner will have been contacted. So if it's you, enjoy your t-shirt. If it's not, do not fret, because by the time this episode goes out, our announcement will also be out that we have got merch, which is the most surreal, weirdest thing ever, that we have actually got to a stage where people want to buy merch of ours. So we have got our merch through a company called Inch Embroidery. So it's just a website that you go onto and you can directly purchase either a t-shirt, a hoodie, a zippy hoodie, or a tote bag. They come in grey and white, and you can also get our logo printed, or for a couple of pounds extra, get it embroidered as well. All of the merch.
And I must say, the embroidery is like, it is brilliant. It's made really well. Like, I was always of the, oh, it needs to be cheaper, like do a printed version. But like, if you can put a couple more pounds towards it, the embroidery is worth the money.
Yeah, we try to keep the cost down as much as we can. So we're actually only taking a pound from every item. And so like, that is for us to do things like go to CrimeCon, do more giveaways, etc. We don't make any money off this. I think that was one of the things that people at CrimeCon were most shocked by, is when we were like, haha, we both work like full-time jobs. People were like, oh my god, like this is insane, that this is just your hobby as such. And we were like, you're telling me. So yeah, we try to keep the cost down as low as we can, but we really hope you love it. as much as we love it. And yeah, please, if you buy some, send us some photos again to the email on Instagram of you wearing the stuff. Like, we're really, really excited to see it. And if there's any other things that you want, we had badges and stuff at CrimeCon, but I'm like, people probably weren't going to buy a badge and then postage and stuff. So I thought we covered all bases, but if there is something else, obviously let us know. A beanie hat or something. I don't wear beanie hats.
I'm not a hat. I look like a not a hat person, to say the least. Just
I look like not a hat person.
Well, I mean, you've got to keep it PC, so I just don't look good in a hat.
You look like a dick. Yeah, yes, it is. But yeah, we really hope you enjoy. So yeah, that is going live on Sunday at 12. So by the time this episode goes out, it'll, if you're a very avid listener, and it's currently Sunday, what, 5th of May, and it is 12 p.m. run to either our Instagram or inchembroidery.com to purchase some Crime Pod merchandise. Okay, finally, I promise this is me onto the case. Big thank you to
the merch will be out by the time you start talking. Oh, no. 12 o'clock, man.
Anyway, listen, big thanks to Hannah for recommending this case. We really appreciate it. Thank you for the recommendations. We are getting through them. We have quite a lot of recommendations, so I think actually for the rest of the year, a lot of them are recommendations. So thank you, Hannah. And as always, I promise I'm going on the case. As always, Instagram message us or email us if you have a case you want us to cover. Okay, so Samantha, have you heard of the disappearance of Corey McKeague or anything about Corey McKeague at all?
Guess what?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, shut up. I have. I have. Oh, that felt good to say.
That is great. I'm so proud of you.
Thank you.
People were absolutely loving that at CrimeCon as well, the amount of times that just people saying to Sam, like, don't worry, I don't know anything either. And I was like, yeah, but she's a crime podcaster.
Yeah. Yeah.
So great. Well, I'm glad you know it. And it's nice to kind of be covering, I was going to say a Scottish case again, but the Corey is Scottish. But it is in England, the case, but still, I'm going to say it's a Scottish case. I also love the name Corey. I think that's a really, really lovely name, and I think it's very rare. So, yeah. Anyway.
I know.
Yes.
A glacial feature, but keep it to yourself. But it came out. It's a lovely name, though. It is really nice. Maybe it's a Scottish name.
Is it a glacial feature?
A Corey.
Is it? Yeah.
Well, a glacier leaves behind a quarry, I think. It's
Is
like
it?
The big, like, you know, in the mountains, or the mountains, the hills. It's like that bit that holds water. It doesn't always hold water. I think that's a quarry. The big dent looks like a seat. You can sit in it. If you
that was a great fun fact. Giant. Let's move on.
Yes.
So Corey was born in Perth, Scotland on the 16th of September 1993, but he was raised in Cooper in Fife and then moved to Dunfermline at the age of 9 following the divorce of his parents. Now his parents are Nicola and Martin. Nicola's surname I think is Urquhart. Is it Urquhart? It's Urquhart. And I just thought I'm going to merge it. Pardon?
Urquhart.
I pronounced it bad to the peeps, Sam. So we're going to hear a lot more from Nicola than Martin throughout the case. So just a reminder that if I'm talking about Nicola.
Sorry, I think it's Urquhart's. Anyway, carry on.
I'm just going to call her Nicola. So you'll hear me talking about it throughout the case. Corey had two brothers, Derek and McKayan. So that they are quite interesting names. I think all three of them are really quite interesting, unique names, and I love that. And they were raised mainly by their mum and attended St Margaret's Primary School and then St Columba's High School, which were both in Dunfermline. Now, Corey left school and studied hairdressing before realising it wasn't really for him. So he went on to study fitness at, I think it was the Robert Gordon College. Is it the Robert Gordon College? Or is it a university? College. It was the Adam Smith College. I wrote down College in Fife because I remembered it when I was studying. I was like, oh, I know the College in Fife. And now I've got here and I've embarrassed myself. I'm sure it's Adam Smith College. Moving on. Corey then decided to fulfil his lifelong dream and joined the RAF Regiment in 2013 and was posted to No. 2 Squadron Royal Air Force Regiment based in RAF Honington. And that was after his initial regiment training at the same base. Now, he was a senior aircraftman gunner and a medic on the squadron. He loved his job and he seemed to thrive doing that job. And he also had a girlfriend named April Oliver, and they had got together in about the August of 2016. Now, as I kind of said in the title, so it's not going to come as a shock to anybody, this is a disappearance case, and it was mainly happened in like the Suffolk Constabulary area. And actually more than £2.1 million was spent investigating Corrie's disappearance, and it actually became one of the most expensive missing person investigations that that force has ever conducted. And in the words of Suffolk Police, it was one that brought a unique pressure to the force. So I thought that was quite interesting, and I kind of wanted to mention that early on before I get into a lot more of the details of what happened. So we're going to go to the 23rd of September 2016 to the Bury St Edmunds area of Suffolk. Now, Bury St Edmunds is locally referred to as Bury. I hope I'm not pronouncing it wrong, because I always do that. And it's a historic market and cathedral town in the West Suffolk district. And that's obviously in the county of Suffolk in England. It is known for like abbeys and cathedrals, kind of things like that. And I mean, in 2011, it had a population of 45,000. So probably by then it went up by a few, but it's not a huge big place. Now, Corrie had gone out drinking with friends on that evening in Bury St Edmunds. Now, April was on holiday in New York, so he was going out with his friends. And he drove himself into town at about 11 p.m. with the intention of then leaving his car overnight. So he planned to just drive in from the base, which was about 10 miles away, go out with his friends, and then he would sort out getting his car the following day. When he parked up, he spoke on the phone to his brother in his car for a while, and then he went and met his friends at a local bar where there was live music, etc. The musicians knew him, and I think it was quite frequent that he was in there, so he was witnessed there, and then they went on to Witherspoon's, a classic staple for a UK night out. A lot of people saw him because he was actually wearing a pink Ralph Lauren shirt, white jeans and boots, so quite a trendy outfit. He was obviously quite confident in himself. He was a really good looking guy. So a lot of people probably recognise seeing somebody in a pink shirt, but also he knew quite a lot of people in the area. As you said, it's not 45,000 isn't a huge population. So the kind of, I was going to say the youth, but he was a 23-year-old guy. So there's probably the same people going out at the weekends, especially the RAF guys. If they're on the base, you know, his family are all up in Fife. He's probably thinking, right, well, every weekend, Monday to Friday, he's at work. And then probably Friday and Saturday, he's going out into town with his mates. So he knew people, and he was going over and he was speaking, and people were chatting away to him. And his mum had kind of said in a quote that, like, once you met Corrie, you never forgot him. So I think that's a really lovely, vibrant personality to be around. They then went on to Flex Nightclub, and Flex Nightclub, if you Google it, it's kind of what you expect from a nightclub called Flex. And he arrived, and he was pretty drunk by this point, and he managed to get in. The doorman actually said to him, like, are you drunk? And he was like, yeah, which good at 5 points for honesty. He then was there. However, the doorman recalled that he had to leave. So he asked him to leave because he was too drunk to stay around. And this was about 1 a.m. Now, he remarked that Corrie was absolutely fine with that. He was no trouble. They actually had a conversation outside in the street after, and then Corrie went on his merry way. So it wasn't as if Corrie was completely intoxicated and was a danger to himself. He was just too drunk to be in the nightclub. So the doorman had kind of said, look, time to move on, which was absolutely fine. He left his friends in the nightclub, and this was the early hours now of the 24th September, and he left to Flex, which was on St Andrew's Street South. He then went to the Mamma Mia's takeaway restaurant, which was reportedly his usual takeaway restaurant, and that was between 1:15 and 1:30. Now, he's seen on the shop CCTV playing rock, paper, scissors with another customer, and he gets himself some food for the night out. I mean, another classic. There is nothing kind of out of the ordinary here. He's obviously been quite drunk, so thought, I'm going to grab something to eat. At 1:20, he's seen on CCTV crossing St Andrew Street North and entering Brenton Govel Street. Now, there's two blurred out figures in the video that they have been identified, but they're nothing to do with it, really. At about this time, he goes into a shop doorway of the shop Hughes, he eats his takeaway, and then he falls asleep. Now, for some people, they're like, oh my God, like sleeping in a doorway. But actually, it could be, if there is a group of them from the RAF base, it might be easier that they all do club in and get a taxi. So who knows? It could be that he's thinking, well, what I'll do is grab a bite to eat. I'll kind of sit down here, just kind of rest my eyes for a bit, and then when the club finishes at 3 a.m. I'll meet up with the rest of my mates and I'll get home together. at 3:08 a.m. a picture from his phone, which is a Nokia Lumia 435, was sent to his friend. And this picture was, I think, of a night out previously. So not that night, it was an old night out. Now, the police don't know if that text sent at that time or if he had maybe sent it in the club, never had signal, and it eventually picked up signal on his phone. They don't know, but this text was sent about that time. Now, he gets up and the last sighting of him is actually on the CCTV at 3:25 in the morning on Brendan Govell Street. Now, he walks into an area called the Horseshoe area. He goes out of view of the camera walking towards the rear of the shops at this Horseshoe area, and there is no footage of him emerging. So to describe this area, the Horseshoe area, it is the back of like pubs and shops, etc. So as you can imagine, it's one of those places that have like industrial bins, like the big Biffa bins that are key locked, and the shops have access to them and the pubs will have them, there'll be glass bins, etc. That is where that Horseshoe area is. And he isn't seen coming out of that. So the only way to get out of that would be come out on the CCTV or to walk into the back of those pubs and clubs or whatever they are that were there. It is not believed at all that he intended to then walk back to the base, because people had thought he could have maybe just took a back route back to the base of RAF Haudington. But that is 10 miles, so like a 16k walk northeast. And this is also on like back roads or like unclassified roads. So you're not talking like a just a big long walk through town. You're talking in the middle of the night, you're already drunk on like rural roads. He would never have made it back, to be honest. His mum also said he would never have walked back to the base, and he would never have slept in a bin either. As he had the weekend off, Corey was actually not reported missing until the 26th of September, which was the Monday, when he failed to report for work. He failed to turn up for parade at 11 a.m. Now, this is a long time, and I can imagine probably thinking, like, did nobody hear from him? But if you think about it, he's gone out. Do you know, he's gone out, but he's gone out on the Friday night. They've maybe thought he's still out. You don't know what the base is like. Like, I've been to an army base, not an RAF base, but an army base. And as much as the guys are all there and they work together, they've all got their separate rooms. And especially at weekends, people will be going out with different mates. People will be going back home. People will be doing their own thing. So it might be that, you know, they've maybe knocked on his door and he's not been in, but they've not really thought, oh, this is the end of the world. We've not seen him. April's in America, so April's maybe not heard from him. She's probably not, well, yes, yeah, she was probably concerned, but how concerned can she be from New York? We don't know how often he spoke to his mum and dad. We really don't know. So do you know what I mean, Sam? It's one of those, like, at first I was like, how did nobody notice him missing for that amount of time? Like, if I was gone for a whole weekend, I'd expect somebody to know. But then I'm like, well, actually, in his circumstances, I don't know how often he was in contact with his friends and family. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Because as well, if you're in the like armed forces and stuff, you don't always have access to your phone. So maybe it was just maybe one of those times and people were probably thinking, oh, well, he'll be in touch when he can.
Yeah. And also, I don't know this about Corey, so this is simply a speculation. And this is no, I'm not trying to, you know, say anything untowards about his character, but it could be that maybe if he's got the weekend off, he maybe went on like weekend long benders. Do you know, it could be that they're thinking, oh, he's still out. Do you know what I mean? And that's not a bad thing at all. He's 23, like, fuck it, go for it. Do you know? So it could be that his friends or his family are thinking he's gone out on Friday night and he's just still out having like a good time. Do you know? So, but yeah, so he was actually reported missing. So initially, if someone doesn't turn up for the RAF or the army, they're reported like as AWOL and it's seen as them like skipping out or whatever. But actually, he was reported missing. And I'll tell you why in a bit later on. But that's all you need to know right now is it was taken seriously and reported as a missing person. And the rescue team, the Suffolk Lowland Search and Rescue Team, helped the police search the area around Bury St Edmunds and the Haunington base, alongside the RAF's own search and rescue team. And this actually involved police helicopters, everything. The investigation begins, and it begins hard. There was an unconfirmed sighting of Corey at the back of a sugar factory at Bury St Edmunds at about 4:20 in the morning, but police stressed that this had been investigated and the person involved was not Corey. The last official sighting from the police was a CCTV at Brent Grovel Street heading to the Horseshoe area. Now, on the morning of his disappearance, his Nokia Lumia mobile phone had moved from Bury St Edmunds to Barton Mill. So that's about 12 miles to the northwest along basically the A1 101 road. phone data and had came out that this journey took 28 minutes, which meant that it couldn't be someone walking on foot. So his phone has been transported in some sort of way in a vehicle. In October, the Suffolk Constabulary seized a bin lorry that was said to have contained his mobile phone, but this line inquiry led to nothing. They couldn't find the phone. It was also noted that the bin lorry seized was only carrying a weight of 15 kilograms, so it couldn't have actually been carrying Corey, as he alone weighed 90 kilograms. So that was ruled out pretty quickly. So the thought of the bin and the phones led to searches being carried out along the lorry, like the bin lorry's route between the two towns. The mobile phone was either switched off at 8 a.m. on the Saturday or ran out of battery or was damaged. And to this day, the phone has unfortunately never been found. One main focus of the investigation was whether someone had actually given Corey a lift as he was maybe walking back to the base. So although his mum said, look, he would not start walking to the base, his mum did say that Corey would have accepted an offer of a lift to him, as he would often offer a lift to someone if he was like saw someone walking on their own and he was driving, he would offer somebody a lift. So his mum's like, okay, I don't believe he would walk back to the base, however, say he maybe had this drunken thought to do it and someone said, well, do you want a lift, he would have accepted and got in their car. His mum also appealed for anyone who had given him a lift to come forward even if something untoward happened, which they're not, of course they're not going to come forward, but she's saying, look, I'd rather just know if something bad has happened, because not knowing where he is worse. Now, police believed that Corey was not in the Bury St Edmunds area, and the superintendent in the case was named as Katie Elliott, and she stated in an interview to the TV with Nicola that they believe there could have been third party involvement, and the police were not ruling anything out at this stage. So I get it, because currently he has just disappeared into thin air. So the investigation also covered parts of a road called the Hollow Road Industrial Estate in Bury St Edmunds. And this was kind of near Great, I think it's Livermere, which is a small village close to the RAF Honington base. And this would have been on his route back to the base if he was walking from Bury St Edmunds. The British Transport Police of the Suffolk Constabulary also got involved, and they searched along the railway lines, and they also searched some of the roads that were closed for traffic but enabled like through different like on-foot searches. Now in November 2016, so I know we're jumping forward a kind of bit, a stretch of the eastbound carriageway of the A14 road was closed between two of the junctions to actually also search for Corey, but nothing was found. On the 10th of October, a dismembered and burnt body was actually found in a suitcase off the A628 road near kind of Derbyshire. Now, initial investigations led the police to state that the body was that of a white man who was under the age of 50. That's all they could kind of say. So Corey's family are thinking this is it and this is horrific, but this is him found. But a DNA analysis, however, proved that it was not Corey. So he is still missing. Now, in the November of the 2016, it was revealed that in the two hours between 3 and 5 a.m. on the morning of the 24th of September, 39 people were seen on the same CCTV camera as the same one that was the last to record Corey's movement. So in that street where we saw Corey, there was another 39 people in that area. Despite repeated inquiries and appeals, 23 of them could not be identified. So they couldn't find them, right? So what I'm going to tell you is actually a really, really cool thing from the police. I actually think it's really impressive. Suffolk Constabulary installed a pod at the Christmas fair in Bury St Edmunds, and that was between kind of 25th and 24th, 26th of November kind of thing. And the public were encouraged to visit the pod and help establish the identity of the 23 people. By the 4th of December, 13 people had been identified. So you just had to go in and like literally stand in front of a camera and they would match you to the people in the CCTV. How cool is that?
Oh, that
like I think amazing. That's a really cool thing. However, there is still 10 people that were not able to be identified. And again, though, I was like, oh, that could be malicious. But then at the same time, if you were somebody that was in the same state as Corey, like you might not remember even being on that street. You might not, you know, I'm not saying it was someone running with an axe down that street, it was just people walking about at night, do you know?
Yeah, and also you might not be at the fair.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I never even thought of that, fair enough. I'm like, why is not everyone at the Christmas fair?
But that is a really cool thing though. It was good.
So in the December of 2016, 5 square miles of woodland between Barton Mills and the RAF base were searched by volunteers and staff from the Suffolk Lowland Search and Rescue Team. The search area was actually not previously examined because they decided to centre on the King's Forest area with the possibility that he'd actually been hit by a car on the way home. So that's a kind of new outlook on it, is actually, okay, Corey could have been walking home and it could have been that someone's hit them and then thought, oh, fuck, if it was somebody drunk driving, if it was somebody, do you know, I hate to obviously say that, but do you get what I mean? It could be that somebody's hit him and his body has just been lying by the side of the road, which is horrible. But by the end of December, it was officially cleared and there was no sign of Corey at all. Now, as I said at the start, there was a reason it went straight to a missing person inquiry, and it's not really openly discussed. However, some parallels were drawn between the proximity of Corey's disappearance to an attempted kidnapping of an RAF serviceman in Marham in the July of that year. So there was an attempt to kidnap this RAF serviceman, this whole big thing, and this was in the July. Corey obviously goes missing in September, so this wasn't really common knowledge during, like, to the public during the investigation. Some people began speculating, however, no parallels have been officially confirmed, but it was why he immediately was put as a missing person, not a no-show at work. Now, while the kidnapping was one route for the investigation to go down, Corey's mum, she was actually, do you know what's even worse, right? Corey's mum's job, so as I'd said, Nicola's going to be mentioned quite a lot, Corey's mum was a family liaison officer with Police Scotland. So this woman knows her shit. She knows what she's entitled to. As much as she's a good evening kind of mother for her missing son, she knows what's happening. And she's a kind of person on the inside. And she said that this whole kidnapping thing was not something that the police were discussing with her. And in the December of 2016, the station commander of the RAF, the guy called Group Captain Mick Smith, ruled out any link between the attempted abduction at RAF Marham and the disappearance of Corey. But it's something to kind of think about and maybe think why it was kind of seen how it was in that light. In November 2016, the family issued a statement on Facebook saying that they were unhappy with the police investigation. And Corey's uncle, Tony Rin, said that this is a major investigation team. Sorry, I read that wrong. And I was like, how have I wrote that? But this is actually what he said. Sorry. So Tony said, quote, "This is a major investigation team in name, not function," end quote. Which, ooh, that is, it took me a while to read that there. I was like, I definitely wrote this, but why? That doesn't make sense, but I get what he's trying to say. So, sorry. Now, the family also said that the decision not to search the landfill in the Barton Mills area for Corey's phone had been wrong as well. Now, in the same December, Nicola, Corey's mum, publicly went on record saying that Suffolk Constabulary, were not properly investigating Corey's disappearance. Now, they actually set up an appeal fund raised in Corey's name, and it had attracted funds of more than 50,000 people by the end of 2016. And Nicola was considering actually hiring a private investigator to pursue the lines of inquiry, which she believed police had failed to do. Suffolk Constabulary defended their actions, saying that they were very focused on finding Corey. Although it is a missing persons inquiry, we're giving it the same resources as a major investigation, and we've ruled out no possibility. So Nicola decides to postpone hiring the private investigator after they agreed to investigate an incident where three men had been seen on the 25th of September setting fire to a car. The police later said that there was absolutely no link between this car fire and Corey's disappearance. And in the same interview, Nicola described her son as a social hand grenade and said that he would have been more than happy again to get in a stranger's car. Now, we're going to January 2017, and this is where I do get a bit fucked off at the police. Like, we have these feelings about the police as it is, but this is where it really fucks me off. The police announced to the public that they are examining Corey's activities on swinger websites. His family had provided Suffolk Constabulary with his username for at least one site and kind of brought this out as a thing. Even if he was, why do we need to announce this to the public? Like, this isn't a public appeal. This is just announcing it. This is trying to bring, what is it, bringing shame on him or his family or his girlfriend? Like, we don't know anything about Corey, if it was quite open that Corey was using these, if his girlfriend knew he was using these. So I just thought that was a really shitty thing from the police. I don't know what your thoughts are, Sam, but I just feel like they've tried to make something out of nothing.
Yeah, I agree. But it's like this happens as well, and especially when the media gets a sniff of it, they don't want to know anything else. They don't want to know any other facts. They want what sells, tabloids. It's like that female that got killed in New Zealand. Oh, she liked BDSM. That's all we're going to focus on. She's murdered, but that's all we're going to focus on. Not the actual murder, or not the disappearance in Corey's case. It is they only want to sell newspapers. So, yeah, that's my
Nah,
opinion.
totally. And actually, the website that he was on was, I think it was called Fab Swingers. And I was like looking at some of the things about it, and that's why I'm not even getting into it, because do you know, it was like fucking, as you can imagine, and you know how I feel about the tabloid press, but Daily Mail are giving it big. He was leading a double life, trawling the internet for casual sex with strangers. A woman who claims she romped with missing airman Corey after me. Fuck off.
Yeah.
Like, I've actually got no time for it. Like, I have absolutely no time for it. And do you know what? If him and his girlfriend were into that, or if he was into that, fucking crack on. But I just hate shitty tabloid papers that are feeling the need to. Do you know, this guy's been missing for a good couple of months. It's absolutely horrific, and this is the way you need to put it out there. Like, fucking behave, man. Anyway, you know how I feel about these, and I will not go on to a Daily Mail and Sun newspaper rant again. So we move on. In the same January, which after obviously this whole Swingers thing comes out, even more happy but sad news comes out, because April Oliver, his girlfriend, who is 21, announces that she is pregnant with Corey's baby. Neither she or Corey were aware of this at the time of his disappearance, as they'd only been dating for the 5 months, as I'd said. So obviously she was on holiday in the United States when he disappeared, but she cut that holiday quick and came back. But yeah, she was pregnant, so she's announced her pregnancy at this time. In the February of 2017, police started searching the landfill previously identified as being the last place his mobile phone was located, when it connected to a tower. Now, they were searching this in the belief that Corey had slept in a bin in the Horseshoe area and had been crushed to death when the bin lorry collected the contents of the bin and then took him to the landfill site. So this is the first time we kind of hear that this is actually what they're investigating. Can you imagine? I don't know what, like, the thought of it myself is making me feel sick, but also like the thought of a family member in that situation, like, I can't even imagine, Sam. Like, I genuinely.
Have they not made bins though now where you can't get into it to sleep in it? Because obviously people that were on the streets or homeless or, just struggling, they went and slept in a bin for safety and for shelter, and so many of them were getting killed. Was something not made so that they couldn't get in them?
No, I'm going to get onto it a bit later. Towards the end, actually, I've kind of got a thing
Oh,
about.
spoiler alert, sorry,
No, it's
didn't
okay.
realize.
About no, it's fine. It's about Nicola. I won't get onto that. But yeah, that's the issue. Is a lot of these bins don't have they don't have a function where, like, if you tried to climb into it, it would start tipping or anything like that. A lot of them are still accessible. But I'll get onto that a bit in the end. Now, this blah 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 blah. Sorry. The Suffolk police said that Corey probably had gone into this bin, slept in it in the Horseshoe area, and his family said they did absolutely not believe this version of events. They point to a really main fact of A, he was proud of his appearance, so why is he going to climb into a rubbish bin? But secondly, which is actually a very fair point, he could have gone and slept in his car, which isn't very far away. And I know that if he was then to get caught by police, you cannot be drunk and in charge of a vehicle. However, I think you would opt for that over a bin. But this search is expected to take 10 weeks, and say we'll kind of see what happens then. On the 13th of February, Corey's mum announces that the £50,000 award offered for information about her son was actually to be withdrawn if nobody came forward within a week. So I think she's obviously starting to be honest. I think she's panicking. I can imagine how she's feeling. They're now saying he was potentially in a bin, so she's probably like, I need as much information as possible. By May 2017, it was revealed the search alone in this waste area had cost Suffolk Police over £1 million, and it might take longer than the estimated 10 weeks. By May, they had actually sifted to 3,000 tonnes of waste. On the 1st of March, a 26-year-old man was arrested on suspicion of attempting to pervert the course of justice. Now, he was not the driver of the bin lorry, nor was he related to Corey. And on the 7th of March, he was released, and the police stated that they believed he had genuinely made a mistake and that the charge had been dropped. I don't know any more about that. If somebody does, please let me know. If people want to speculate, again, let us know. But anyway, this is where it gets really, really awful. In conjunction with this, this is who I believe this man could be, but I could be wrong. Police revealed that in conjunction with this, police revealed an error had been made in the calculations of the weight of the bin lorry and that it was more close to 220 pounds. So she stated on Facebook, Corey's mum, quote, "This can really devastatingly only mean one thing." So when they said that the bin was under like 90 kilograms, like Corey weighed about 90 kilograms. So when they said the bin was under that, he couldn't have been in it. But now they're saying that the bin was close to 220 pounds, so 100 kilograms. He could have been in that bin with the weight. So I think, I don't know if this person that's been arrested has made a mistake with the calculations of the bin. But they're saying that now it would have been likely that the weight of a body was in that bin. On the 5th of June, it was announced that the police were finding items from the right time and place of Corey's disappearance, and about 4,430 tonnes of waste had been searched. But a police spokeswoman said that the work is constantly being reviewed and the search team are still finding items from the right time frame that are identifiable, as coming from the town. This search will continue on a week-by-week basis. On the 18th of June, April Oliver announced that she had gave birth to Corey's daughter, Ellie Louise, and that was on the 11th of June that she gave birth. So Corey is now a dad and he has still not been found and it is approaching a year since his disappearance. On the 21st of July, 20 weeks into the landfill search, so 20 weeks it took, the Detective Superintendent Katie Elliott announced at a press conference that the search of the landfill had come to an end with no positive results on Corey. The search was now focusing on incinerated waste, and the police were also going to start a comprehensive review of the investigation as well. Now, Nicola, Corey's mum, has publicly acknowledged the possibility that Corey may never be found, but criticised the police's decision to hand the landfill site back to the owners and sought an injunction to prevent that the area where his remains are, and believed she wanted this to stop it being disturbed and have it searched again. But as I'm saying, it took 20 weeks. That's so difficult, you know, if they, like, what they are looking through, it'd be so, so tricky to try and find him. Police were criticised by the public as well for not continuing the search, and they'd stated it wasn't about the money being spent on the landfill, it's not about that, but they said that there was no reason to go searching. And a former police officer actually came forward and said that, like, we have searched everywhere, what are we looking for? Because, and this is quite graphic, I do apologise, if Corey's body was in that bin and then went into a bin lorry, we are not looking for a body. You're not looking to find Corey's body. His body would be not one body. I'm not going to go into any more than that because it's already horrific as it is. Now, after the police stopped the landfill search in July 2017, Nicola, Corey's mum, went on record and said that she didn't agree with the version of events that the Suffolk police have put forward. They maintain that Corey slept in a bin, which was then emptied into the truck, and he was crushed and then buried at the landfill or incinerated. Nicola says that Corey had been asleep at the doorway of the shop for nearly 2 hours. She finds it hard to believe that he would then get up from a doorway and go and sleep in a bin. She maintains that a third party had to have been involved. She also disputes the evidence about the bin load as well. So the police said it was an unusual 256 pounds. So we're now looking at 116 kilograms. By stating that loads over 200 pounds, 100 kilograms, were not out of the ordinary from that route from the Horseshoe Bar in Bury St Edmunds, right? I know that's a lot of information, but she's disputing that. Like, you know, she's saying that that isn't a normal amount. Like, surely that bin, but they're saying, yeah, that bin. So how did they get the wrong figure? Does that make sense? Or do you need me to explain that a bit more? Like, be honest.
Do you mean that normally the bin wouldn't, or that is the average that the bin would weigh, usually, or it's not?
So she's disputing the evidence about the bin load. So the police said was unusual that it was 116 kilograms. However, they're now saying that, for goodness sake, I'm getting confused. So she said that the police had said that it was unusual for bins to weigh over 116 kilograms. But Corey's mum is saying that it's not unusual and that bins over 100 kilograms were not out of the ordinary for that area. I don't know how she knows that, but the police are obviously trying to say, look, we think that your son was in the bin, and she's trying to find evidence to say that why she doesn't believe it. So she's saying about the bin weight. That all sounds a bit complicated. I do apologise. But that is what it kind of meant. The final part from his mum as well is, in August 2018, Nicola maintained that it might have actually been possible for Corey to have left the horseshoe area without being seen on CCTV. As a pivotal part of the inquiry, had focused on the belief it was impossible for him not to have been, like, it was being impossible not to detect him leaving the horseshoe area, where she's saying there was a way that he could have left. Again, I don't know exactly what route this is, but she is saying that it actually could have been possible and that the police are wrong with that again. So Dr. Stuart Hamilton, who was a forensic pathologist, stated that if Corey's body had been in the bin lorry and it was crushed, then actually the rate of decomposition would be faster than normal for a human body. He also stated that the amount of waste on the site, the cross-contamination from one other human DNA, would be a huge, like, possibility. So again, as I'd said, they're not looking for a body, and actually DNA evidence to try and find if Corey was there is going to be so, so difficult. In August 2017, the family reinstated the £50,000 reward for information, and the money had actually been donated by a local business person earlier in the investigation, but this was also withdrawn again when the police started searching the landfill site for a second time. So the second landfill search starts in October 2017, and Suffolk Police announced that they are starting another search at the landfill site at Milton in Cambridgeshire. This was going to focus on an area adjacent to the previous search area, but they believed to contain waste taken to the site around the same time that Corey went missing. Now, a review into the investigation into Corey's disappearance by a specialist police unit based in East Midlands supported Suffolk Police's theory, that Corey had climbed into the bin at the horseshoe area and was brought by bin truck to the landfill site at Milton. Despite this, the police said that their search for Corey at the landfill site would wind down by Christmas 2017. So that's what they are saying. Suffolk announced in 26th of March 2018 that the search for the missing airman would actually be stood down, as there was, quote, no realistic lines of inquiry left. So that has been pulled out from the second landfill site search. The Suffolk Police Federation noted that the investigation had brought unique pressures to the force. Now, the day after this, Corey's mum Nicola and brothers appeared on the Victoria Derbyshire show to highlight what they cited as inconsistencies, with the raw data referring to, again, the weight of the bin lorry. Corey's mum said that the data was either manipulated or someone was lying to the police. In April 2018, Corey's dad, Martin, comes forward and acknowledges that his son's probably dead and that he was hoping to hold a memorial service in that summer following the police decision to end the investigation. Now, Corey's dad throws an absolute curveball here, and he speculates in an interview with the Daily Mirror that Corey had killed himself because of the pressures of fatherhood. Now, the rest of the family are like, this is absolutely not true, as the first text notifying Corey that April was pregnant actually didn't get sent to his phone until after he disappeared. So April didn't know she was pregnant. And, you know, like, so Corey, how's Corey going to know that she's pregnant if she didn't know that she was pregnant? Also quite bold from his dad to go to the Daily Mail and be like, I think my son just committed suicide. Like, where the fuck is that coming from? Anyway, intended disappearance was also put to doubt by the fact that Corey was really happy. He was making plans to meet up with his brother Derek on the night that he went missing. He sent, you know, a text at 3:08 a.m. He had booked flights to go home to Dunfermline for Halloween that year. His mum also pointed out that he had a dog that he kept at the RAF base, and he wouldn't have left that behind intentionally. So his mum comes forward and she says that there's three possible scenarios. One, that he was met with an accident and was dead. Two, that he left voluntarily. Or three, a third party was involved. In the December 2016, it was revealed that Corey's bank and social media accounts had actually never been touched after his disappearance. His father then releases a statement on social media saying that Corey was in the Suffolk Waste Disposal System somewhere, but that his remains are essentially irretrievable. He acknowledged that his son was prone to sleeping in and on top of bins, and that he was in the bin that the truck had delivered to the wayside on the morning of the 24th September 2016. So again, this dad is just on a different planet to the rest of the family. He's now coming out and saying that it was quite a regular thing for Corey to sleep in bins, whereas his mum's saying that she has never heard of this being a thing that Corey's done before. Now, at the same time, Nicola, Corey's mum, states that she will continue to look for answers, citing the fact that the coroner had actually not issued a death certificate and he is still presumed missing rather than presumed dead. Now, the second anniversary of Corey's disappearance was approaching, and Nicola revealed that the police only had the CCTV footage of the Saturday morning up until 12 p.m. She states that Corey could have actually got up from sleeping in the horseshoe area and left any time after the CCTV footage stops. As the 28-day period for retaining CCTV had passed, there was no way of actually kind of knowing that. So it could be that Corey had slept behind a bin or somewhere and actually woke up in Bury St Edmunds at like 12:30, 1 p.m. on the Saturday and got up and left. They never thought to check the CCTV for that full day. Is that not nuts to you?
That is wild.
Yeah.
Like, I am shook at that information. Like, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Do we not check for like maybe 4 to 8 hours or something?
It's nothing.
CCTV.
So again, yeah, he could have, you know, he could have walked out then and nobody will ever know. And another post on Facebook in November 2018, Nicola states that on her last meeting with Suffolk Police, she was shown some CCTV footage of people going in and out of the horseshoe area on the morning that Corey disappeared. All the people in the footage were wearing dark clothes, apart from one individual who is seen leaving the area wearing light-coloured trousers, the same colour that Corey was wearing on the night in question. Nicola acknowledged that it was possible that Corey left and is now AWOL. However, she also stated that she has never believed this is probable. Corey had made no plans and no reason to never be seen again. In October 2018, the Suffolk Police revealed that they had analysed the data for the bin weights again as carried from the horseshoe area to the landfill site in Milton. And it was normally between 44 pounds, which is 20 kilograms, and 66 pounds, which is 30 kilograms. So during the period shown as January 2016 to February 2017, that is what it came up as its highest. The highest it ever was 30. It was nearly 220 pounds, as I said, 100 kilograms once in that entire time. And that was on the morning of the 24th September when the load was registered as 256 pounds, which is 116 kilograms. It was determined then by those figures that Corey's body was inside the bins that had been emptied. The police stated they believed Corey's remains are somewhere in the landfill tip at Milton. In November 2020, it was announced that a full inquest would be conducted into Corey's death, which was requested by the family. The inquest began on the 7th of March 2022 in the Suffolk Coroner's Court in Ipswich. It finished on the 22nd of March 2022 and concluded that Corey had died after climbing into a commercial waste bin, which was then tipped into a waste lorry. In a narrative conclusion, jurors said that he had died about 4:20 a.m. in Bury St Edmunds as a result of, quote, compression asphyxia in association with multiple injuries. His death was contributed to by impaired judgment due to alcohol consumption. Now, they also said that the bin that he climbed into was a 1,100-litre commercial waste bin that had ineffective bin locks and there was an ineffective search of the bin. As I'd said, the medical cause of death was compression asphyxia. Corey's mum, Nicola, criticised Biffa Waste Services, as you spoke about earlier, Sam, which operate bins in the area, for not adding locks to the bins. She said recently, "It's infuriating. It does upset me because they've learnt nothing." And this was from an article I read in 2013 where she had gone and seen that Biffa are still not adding locks to their bins. So as you said, Sam, you could climb into a bin still to this day. I don't know if an official death certificate has ever been released, but Corey is, to the police, considered as dead and has been considered to be dead since he climbed into that bin. It is frustrating because I don't know how the bin system works, and I really tried to look into it, but I don't know if the bins are weighed like every time they're collected and emptied, because if so, why did nobody then think of checking? And I think that's the man that was potentially arrested, is I think that he's maybe then thought, well, that's really heavy, never thought about it. And then when this whole thing about Corey's came up, he's then been like, fuck, I should have checked what the weight of that bin was. And that is what they put in the trial, an effective search of the bin. So I don't know if binmen have a duty if their bin is double its load, or, you know, in this case, the bin is sometimes 30 kilograms. And on this day, it was, what, 100 odd. Why would you not think to check it? But again, I don't know. So that is unfortunately where it kind of finishes. As I said, not really, it's not really a crime. It's not really a murder. It's nothing. It's just a really, really tragic, horrible accident. However, I can't say that for certainty, because actually we don't know if Corey walked out that horseshoe area. We genuinely don't know. And we don't know if somebody came in the back of the horseshoe area and killed him and dumped him in a bin. We genuinely don't know. And I don't know if we'll ever really know, to be honest, because if it is the bin theory, he will never be found, which is horrendous. You know, he has a child, a toddler, like a grown-up daughter, almost, I say grown-up daughter, but like a good, you know what, she was 2017 that she had the baby. So you're seven. Looking at, wow,
turning quick, seven this year.
Quick math, Sam, so yeah.
Yep.
So yeah, is that kind of all you knew about it, Sam, or is there anything still that you'd like to add?
No, that was a huge insight into more of it, obviously, more information. But yeah, I can only just say exactly what you just said. It's a tragic, awful story, and well, it's one of those ones that's so infuriating, but especially for the family and friends, but no one will ever know, or maybe at least one person knows, but us, we'll never.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Someone that spoke to us at CrimeCon actually said that something they find really bizarre about us is that we don't ever say bye, we just end. So yeah. That's all from us. Bye.
No, let's just end right
here. Say bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening, guys. You'll hear us next week.
Yeah, and we're never going to say bye again.
Yeah, we've tried it and I don't think it works.